and all the lanterns were lit. Written by Paper Inui. Read by Opalsong. Part 1 of the So Falls the Light series. If three broken fingers were the cost of bringing Inquisition soldiers back hale and healthy, Cassandra counted it a low one. A seeker went where she was needed, even when necessity consisted of sloshing up to her knees in bog water and smiting demons back into tatters of fade essence. She allowed herself a sigh of relief when the towers of Skyhold pried apart the gray of snow and sky. Her horse whinnied hopefully. It was a new, contrary creature, to replace one maimed in a roadside ambush, and it cared woefully little for Cassandra's authority. At least they were united in the purpose of trudging uphill, towards the lure of a night under a roof. Nightfall overtook them before they reached Skyhold. Even Varric, who'd kept their company entertained with one increasingly outlandish tale after another, had focused on moving forward. The Inquisitor sparked a flame atop her staff and propped it up on her stirrup like a chevalier's lance. The cold glazed the snow into a crust, thick enough for even the horses to step on. The portcullis grinding down behind them was the most welcome sound Cassandra had heard all day. Lanterns still shone at the stables. She hauled her saddlebags and shield off the back of her horse, happy to let a groom take the weary animal. The others scattered to seek their beds, and Cassandra muttered good nights in their general direction. They'd go over their endeavors tomorrow with clearer heads. In the infirmary, a healer with a seemingly permanent pinch of worry between his brows inspected her hand. He declared the field splints serviceable and promised her a mage's attention first thing on the morrow. Mustering a thank you, she made for her quarters above the forge. Even with the bone-gnawing chill outside, it would be warm in there. She could bury herself under the furs and forget the world for a few hours. As she peeled off her mail, not a trivial task with one good hand, but every squire was either asleep or too deep in their cups to manage a buckle at this hour. She began to appreciate that she was filthy. Mire water probably still squelched somewhere in her boots. She'd slept in said boots and her gambeson for the last 2 weeks. That brought her, an iron lantern and clean clothes in tow, to the baths in the cellars when midnight neared. Whatever else the original builders of the keep had devised, they'd been disposed to a few worldly comforts. The ancient pipes of the baths still worked. Water was raised from a ground well to cisterns with ovens built underneath them. She let the steaming water sluice into the stair-edged stone bath, stripped, threw 3 buckets of cold water over herself to wash off the worst grime, and then sank into the bath. It was a rare moment when she was not occupied. As the right hand of the divine, she was seen as a martial actor with little use for subtlety. This held true, but did not lead to the simplistic conclusion that she acted without forethought or planning. She might not tread the winding paths of diplomacy and subterfuge that Leliana or Josephine did. Even so, her mind turned near constantly. The silence, the twilight, and the stinging heat combined to leave her thoughts adrift. The riding aches in her legs melted gradually, and the old injury that tended to pull her right shoulder back gave up some of its tightness. She did, of course, have a sheathed dagger next to her string-wrapped soap on the rim of the bath. Her bandaged hand was resting out of the water. Wet and warm combined to sour a healing wound all too easily. Light spilled across the drifting steam in the air before she realized she wasn't alone. Lady Seeker. Even into the second watch of the night, Josephine's voice was still effortlessly courteous. That seemed no small feat to Cassandra, as she raked her dripping hair from her face. Lady Montpellier, she sounded curt in comparison.
You're back safe. I'm happy to see you.
Setting down a small basket of soaps and vials, Josephine unwound her hair. Her attire had eased a few notches from her full Antivan finery. All the same, she looked minutes from being ready to step into a diplomatic soiree.
May I join you? I'm told we should conserve the water now that it's winter.
Ah, Cassandra said. Certainly. She fumbled for her paltry social graces, while Josephine undressed, every piece of clothing neatly set aside on the wall-side bench, and scurried across the stone floor to dip into the other end of the bath.
Oh, Andraste's mercy! How do Ferelden's live here? The seneschal says the snow may not melt until cloud reach.
It never melts on the peaks to the west. Cassandra ran a hand through her hair, leaving it in damp spikes. It may have been an unusually cold winter. I truly haven't had the time to notice.
Even Valroyal was never like this. Of course, the ambassadors would be invited to the winter palace in Halamshiral, so one could escape the more unpleasant season.
And you have just returned from the Kokari Wilds. Josephine drew a little breath, then sank a little deeper into the water.
You must forgive me, my lady. My discomforts pale into insignificance.
I took no offense. I am used to the road. You have your own familiar grounds. Cassandra grabbed her soap, dunked her head, and stood up. The bath was for soaking and warming, but others would use it before the night was through.
Of course. Josephine's head curled forward.
Next to the oven was a spot where one could stand without getting chilled. Cassandra began to work a lather into the palm of her good hand, with less dexterity than usual, and the soap slid from her fingers and skidded merrily across the floor. Muttering in frustration, she went after it.
"May I help you?"
Josephine had risen halfway, up to her hips in the water. "I am," Cassandra crouched, reaching for the furtive soap. "Quite fine, thank you." And succeeded only in propelling the bar into the bath. Josephine tucked it out by the string, and gave Cassandra the most even of looks. There was scarcely a dint in her sculpted eyebrow.
"Please, if I were a traveling companion, surely I could extend a hand when yours had been injured in our cause?"
Momentarily, Cassandra was caught up in a catalogue of her comrades-in-arms attempting to make this offer to her. She sloughed off this reverie before it could grow too outrageous. "Very well," she said. "It's warmest by the oven." She scooped up cold water from another cistern.
"You'd rather wash with that?"
Josephine raised a brow. "It's not important. I already bathed."
"If I may be so bold, Lady Seeker, sometimes you might use a little indulgence."
With an air of decision, Josephine took her half-filled bucket and let the hot water spout into it.
"Please sit."
Bereft of other options, Cassandra sat on one of the wooden stools left in the baths, to be used as an aid in washing or reaching. The floor was clammy under her soles, but the oven and its stones radiated a glancing glow of heat. Josephine hummed under her breath as she spread the soap in her hands. They came up to Cassandra's head, fragrant of something that had not been in her plain soap, heavy and sweet and floral. It was, paradoxically, a familiar scent. The dense stench of peat and stink of waterlogged corpses, the bite of brimstone from rage demons clad in molten rock, followed it at once. She remembered that fragrance, and the Inquisitor holding a wide-bloomed flower by its stem, hand dripping from the pond where she picked it.
"Dawn lotus?"
"Yes," Josephine said. "A little richer than what I'd prefer, but one makes do."
If scented soaps in the Ferelden backlands in the dead of winter are you making do, I fear what you could accomplish with effort.
You see it daily, my lady, but an Antivan always has her ways.
As she spoke, Josephine put her soft scribe's fingers in Cassandra's hair and rubbed the soap into her scalp. Bowing her head, Cassandra let her, and quite forgot to continue the conversation. Such a simple comfort, a small favor, but it worked a deep sigh free from her chest.
Water, Josephine warned, then rinsed off the lather. There, that's done.
Cassandra wiped the water from her eyes. Thank you. Can I... Despite her earlier dismissal of her present fellows, sharing a bath with other women was not a strange idea. The strict semi-military life among the Seekers had instilled that in her. Still, she wasn't so certain where Josephine's Antivan upbringing drew the lines.
Oh no, I'm fine.
Josephine dropped her head so that her wet hair hung like curtains of thick ink.
Though, perhaps, if you'd be so kind as to wash my back?
This particular line seemed to parallel Cassandra's own. That I can do. The torch by the door was low by the time they were finished and drying themselves with the coarse linen cloths provided for bathers. The tallow candle and Cassandra's lantern burned with a tall, spitting flame that marked the final dregs of the wick. Josephine pinned the wrung coil of her hair on top of her head.
Now all I need to do is sneak into my room without running into any visiting dignitaries, representatives, or academic hopefuls. If Lady Bourdon complains about the stairs to her room one more time, I'll...
Tell her that she may sleep in the lower bailey with the hounds and stable boys if the stairs aren't to her liking. Cassandra was gratified for her quip when Josephine couched a clearly traitorous giggle into her palm.
No, I might entertain such a daydream while I find another unlucky servant to climb those stairs for her, as if she couldn't descend for supper on her own.
With some effort, Cassandra shrugged her way into a clean shirt. I take it there is a point to meeting her demands.
She might finally provide us with a way to meet with Her Imperial Majesty.
Josephine sighed. I don't wish to think about it now. We're long into the second watch. Having managed her breeches and tunic, Cassandra left the buckled vest aside, as it was too much trouble, and towed her way into her boots. I agree. It was a long journey this time.
Will Sarah Tethras regale us with the more exciting parts tomorrow?
Does the sun rise in the east? Cassandra huffed, not unkindly. Josephine sounded genuinely delighted by the prospect of stories. I will tell you now that while I did stumble into a morass while chasing a walking corpse, it did not take Iron Bull and the Inquisitor to pull me back up.
I'll take your word.
However late the hour, Josephine's laughter had a low, lovely sound. She tucked her dress straight.
Ah, your lantern's gone out.
I'll find my way.
There's ice all over the upper bailey.
Josephine shook her head.
I should walk with you. I'm going to the keep in any case.
The night is deep and vaulted with stars, as brilliant as they might only get in winter. Cassandra had thought longingly of her bed more than once today, but the air tasted pure rather than parching cold, and she felt more awake again. They edged their way across the bailey, past the training targets. Josephine held her lantern high, her other hand laid on Cassandra's forearm. The forge gleamed with the remains of the day's fires. Cassandra had carved herself a living space in the timber loft above, when Skyhold had still been a disused, weather-stained mess, and remained there, even when quarters opened in the central keep. She was close to the training yard here, and could keep an eye on the goings-on in the bailey. Once on top of the stairs, she borrowed Josephine's lantern to light a few of the old candles on the table. That done, she had light enough to settle by. The trestle table and the chairs, their backs worn smooth by generations of hands, and occasional application of carpenter's sand. Her bed in the corner beside the chimney jamb,
the woolen canopy drawn shut to warm its space. Home, such as it was.
I'll be going then.
Josephine smiled a little, as she was wont to do, and took up her lantern. Cassandra started back to the present.
Ah, I was going to...
The walk in the open air had cleared her thoughts, but they went spinning like wind-tossed banners.
Yes?
She could almost hear Varric's tart tones.
This is why you have no friends, Seeker. No sense of social subtlety.
She declared to her subconscious that it could pick someone else to narrate her bouts of self-awareness, and grabbed a trailing idea by its end.
Mull some wine, she said. We met a merchant in Redcliffe who had a shipment of Navarran spices. A frivolous use of our travel funds, but...
Some things are worth the expense.
The lantern clicked against the table as Josephine set it down.
Is this an invitation, Lady Seeker?
Yes, it seems to be.
Cassandra lifted one of the chairs towards the hearth that opened in the chimney wall.
If you wish.
Gathering her skirts, Josephine took the offered seat. Some rummaging brought up a pot of honey and Tantervale red, of passable vintage, in Cassandra's small stores. They spoke of this and that while she bundled her spices and cheesecloth and mixed everything in an iron pot. The everyday happenings and small absurdities of Skyhold, woven into Josephine's words, fed the warm, peaceful feeling that had sneaked over her. Far be it from her to shirk her duty when the Inquisitor required her. There was something to be said for returning from that duty.
Omens, Josephine said at once after her first sip of the heated wine.
Cassandra had poured it into earthenware goblets. Josephine took hers as if it were an Orlesian spun-glass flute.
Dried cherry and cinnamon. There's something else.
Cassandra waited, shifting a little in her seat.
Cardamom? No, too sweet for that. Something that lingers in the mouth.
After another moment, she took pity on Josephine. An old family secret.
For the entire Pentagast clan?
No, only my uncle's wife. I have few fond memories of her, but she always mixed these spices for the Saturnalia wine.
You have my word as a Montpellier that your secret will be safe.
Dragonthorn seeds, Cassandra said, glad to be distracted. She did not have much time to dwell on times past. The late hour and the sphere of firelight made her thoughts reach out and sweep across the dustier corners of her mind.
Yes, they are poison until roasted. I don't know that anyone cooks with them outside of Navarra.
Marvelous!
Josephine laid her goblet on the narrow rim of the mantel. But I did promise to keep your secret.
You did.
Leaning forward, Cassandra watched the fluttering embers of the fire.
A secret for a secret? Then you can woo your dignitaries with my aunt's mulled wine, if that's what you were planning.
Why, my dear lady, I never...
The firelight softened Josephine's smile into a mere imitation of amusement, but it echoed in her timbre.
Very well, a secret. My favorite character in any story is Captain Belladonna.
Cassandra stared. That smuggler of ill repute?
She is a swashbuckler,
Josephine insisted, her eyes glimmering.
I was in Orlais when the serial was first published. My friends and I would argue over the plot twists for hours.
Afloat on the ease of the moment, she'd forgotten that Cassandra Pentagast did not, in fact, know the first thing about Hart and Hightown, and knew even less about the highly suspect sequel. And then Josephine had stepped right over the awkward pause that should have been there.
I was delighted to meet Sarah Tethras in person, even if he doesn't know the first thing about describing ships.
He doesn't? Cassandra managed. Well, his barbrawls are very authentic.
I suppose if he were inclined to research, there would be ample opportunity in Skyhold.
Josephine hid a yawn behind steepled fingers.
Pardon me.
It's very late.
Slowly, Cassandra could feel the wine making her drowsy, weighing her own eyelids. It would be best to let this wave of sleep actually catch her. Josephine set a hand on Cassandra's own where it rested on her knee. A quiet, steady, eloquent gesture, as so many other things about Josephine were. "Thank you. I hadn't thought my night would take such a turn, but it was a pleasant surprise." In place of words, taken aback by the candid warmth that rose in her, Cassandra gave her hand a short, close clasp. "Shall I walk you?"
"I'd be delighted, but I might end up inviting you for tea, and neither of us would get any sleep."
Josephine rose and gathered her cloak from the back of the chair. "Then let us not ruin a good conclusion." Cassandra did walk her as far as the door, where she lingered until Josephine's lantern had climbed the steep stairs to the keep. Blowing on her chilled fingers, she at last shut and bolted the door. The fire had given up its high dancing heat to the stones of the chimney, and it brushed her skin as she undressed enough to burrow under the furs and blankets. Her sword was leaned in the crook of bedpost and sideboard. She touched the hilt as her habitual last reassurance, to make sure that the blade was loose in the scabbard. The small nightly shiftings of the building surrounded her, soft, homey sounds. Then, blowing out her candle, Cassandra curled into the bed and let sleep descend on her at last. The end.
Now flee from the dragon's heart, warring battle-scarred, breach in to the fate has come.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong, and from there you can find a link to the author's post. Thanks for listening!
Faded from the Winter. Written by Paper Inui. Read by Opalsong. Part 2 of the So Falls the Light series. The carved doors of the war room banged shut behind Josephine. The noise was accompanied by the receding rap of Cassandra's boot heels on the stone. Josephine hastened after her. "Seeker Pentagast, a word, if I may?"
"Yes, Lady Montellier?"
Cassandra swerved a look at her. Her brows were tightly knit and did not ease for Josephine's benefit. She'd worn that glare of intense, unhappy concentration for most of the meeting. While Leliana ran them through the inexplicable disappearance of a crucial agent in Verchet, Cassandra stared instead at the Ferelden side of the war table map, gloved fingers tapping the meticulously illuminated parchment. Josephine might sympathize. It had been altogether inopportune timing for a meeting, but Leliana's news had been urgent. Josephine trusted her friend to have the situation in hand now that they'd convened to lay out a plan. For herself, Josephine had other endeavors today.
You will be at the Wintersend reception tonight, I hope?
Cassandra visibly mustered herself. I will. I must, no?
It might be put that way.
They came to Josephine's study, opening on the left side of the corridor. She quelled the instinct to gently steer Cassandra to a chair and invite her to unravel whatever knots were snarling up her temper. She only slowed her pace, so Cassandra was forced to do the same or overtake her.
You wish something of me, Cassandra said. Ask.
By your leave, then. Are you familiar with the Marquis du Lac, the head of a very old noble family from Valchevin?
I know of the Dulocs. I've never met one.
The Marquis is here for the reception, arrived this morning, without prior word, and in reparation for the quarters where I had to house him.
Josephine halted herself.
I do apologize. My thoughts are going 100 ways. The important thing is, he admires you greatly. Divine Beatrix III was a distant relative of the Dulocs in her earthly life.
I see. Cassandra all but bit off the words. Usually her frankness struck Josephine as refreshing, like a gust of sweet air on a smothering day. Now it had a jagged, frosty edge to it. I assume you need me to entertain this Marquis?
He holds trading rights in Jadar. If we can win his favor, our supply routes to Northern Orlais could be shortened by weeks.
She was over-explaining again. The exasperation in Cassandra's stance threatened to snap and burst.
If I might seat him next to you, I know you don't enjoy this pomp and circumstance, but...
Cassandra cast her eye towards the wall.
If it helps you, do it. It's been a trying morning.
Recognizing a reconciliation when one was offered, or even summarily thrust her way, Josephine said,
"So it has. Let's hope Leliana's troubles will be solved, too."
Cassandra's hand twitched, then closed into a loose fist that she pressed to her hip. Her exhalation was more rueful than irritated.
"I will be there, my lady. You needn't fret about that."
"Excellent. That leaves only 78 other things I must attend."
Cassandra graced her with a husky, amused huff. It was, perhaps, all Josephine could ask for.
I'll leave you to them.
With a brisk, unvarnished nod, Cassandra left for the main hall. The door rattled at the far end of the corridor, signaling her exit, and Josephine's quiet, "Thank you," fell unheard. Josephine fit the last gemmed pin in her hair just as the evening bell sounded in the watchtower. The three knells, curiously mournful in the brass body of the ancient bell, reverberated across the fortress grounds. She dashed a sprinkle of rose water over her hair, straightened her bodice for the last time, and hurried downstairs as swiftly as she could while maintaining an air of proper serenity. The eaves of Skyhold were still clumped with icicles that made every sensible soul give the underhangings a wide berth. In the garden, the hardy early spring flowers were spreading, dotting the soft green grass with colors. Hopeful, Josephine had had a pavilion raised there, in case some of the guests fancied a breath of fresh air in the evening. The Inquisition had only taken up residence in the fortress the past winter, and this was the first sizable feast they were hosting. She'd had a crew of servants sweeping, mopping, airing, plastering, and hammering the main keep into presentable shape for the last month. Some doors had simply been barred and a guard posted on them, in the end. Running the last 15 things that might go wrong and her immediate plans for addressing them in her mind, she stepped into the main hall. It had been decorated in the formal heraldry of the Inquisition, trestle tables laid end on end along the sides. Most of the palaces and estates of Orlais and Antiva had halls broader and better lit than this. She despaired briefly of the sitting arrangements. With the wrought iron candelabras lit and raised, and the tablecloths shimmering white under the golden candlelight, the hall seemed almost inviting. Rustic, grievously rustic. but the tall ceiling and the gleaming painted glass of the windows lent it a certain solemnity. What the main hall lacked was any sort of vestibule. Skyhold was built for defense, not for holding court. She'd had no choice but to allow the guests to enter and mingle as they arrived. A smattering of Orlesian masks and earthier Ferelden fashions already filled the room. In the old Imperium, they sacrificed a Eurymethiel at the end of winter, she heard someone say. I'm assuming you have something more sedate planned to crown the festivities, Lady Ambassador?
Sarah Pavas. Josephine turned to find Dorian leaning over the nearest table. She was still not certain if that was the right term of address, but he hadn't objected.
Yes, I was rather hoping we might avoid any blood being shed.
It is customary to postpone duels until the next dawn, even in Ferelden.
The imperious snap of heels suggested the identity of the next arrival before she even spoke.
Perhaps the Tevinters do not observe such courtesies.
Slights are addressed on the spot.
Dorian picked up a goblet, as if to inspect it for some minute imperfection of cut.
Nothing livens up a tedious evening like a magical duel between galliards.
Vivian went past Josephine in a sweep of silks. Her mask bore the filigree image of some peregrine, its plumes worked in silver and tipped with jewels.
Do try to restrain yourself, then. We are looking to make a positive impression, no, my dear Josephine?
First enchanter. Josephine sketched a polite half-bow. That would be ideal. I must beg your leave. Our guests are on their way. For all their bon mots, she could be sure, mostly so, in Dorian's case, that those two could comport themselves properly. On account of the Wintersand night, the Herald's Rest had been opened for the soldiers and workers, and ale and wine would flow on the Inquisition's coin tonight. Josephine held a private hope that it would suffice to keep some of the more eclectic members of the Inquisitor's inner circle from making an appearance. She'd never have belittled their efforts. Her only doubt concerned their courtesies. Now, if she could only make sure the Herald herself planned to appear. Josephine could understand Lavellan hardly relished the prospect. As an elven mage at the head of the Inquisition, she'd stood on treacherous footings from the first. Between her and Cassandra, Josephine steeled herself to the possibility that she'd have to employ some elaborate persuasion yet tonight.
Lady Montpellier?
The thought of Cassandra had apparently summoned her to the door. She'd exchanged her brigandine and leathers for a sleeveless jerkin of ink-dark velvet, lined with carmine at the hem and collar. The snug sleeves of her shirt repeated the red stitching, and its turned collar bared her neck down to the dip of the clavicles. Although she held herself with steely, soldierly poise, her voice was tinged with something akin to hesitation. Josephine blinked twice, then found the breath that had stayed to tarry in her throat. Lady Seeker! She'd known noblewomen who would have committed murder with a hair accessory for that long, queenly line of Cassandra's neck. That she hid it under gambeson and gorget all the time surely counted as a minor crime against beauty.
Am I presentable, then?
Presentable was nothing short of an insult to the figure she cut.
Blessed Andraste, Josephine said with sincerity. You are striking, my lady.
Well, that is one worry calmed.
Cassandra corrected her already flawless posture.
I haven't been to any court for too long, and my wardrobe is more suited to travel than battle these days.
I shall have to help that matter, if you wish, of course.
Josephine laid a friendly hand on Cassandra's forearm and caught something with a warm note of clovers wreathing her hair. The touch told her that Cassandra was as tense as she appeared.
I must repeat what you said to me. There's no need to fret.
You are on home ground here.
I won't say that the hundreds of etiquette lessons don't give me a leg up, Josephine said. But you are a living legend to many of our guests, the hero of Orlais, They will not expect grace so much as a certain martial mystique.
Oh, wonderful.
Not the most apt choice of words, it seemed. Josephine went on hastily. Sprezzatura, as the Antivan goes, can be achieved in many ways. Be what you are, Lady Cassandra. Resolve and discipline have their own charm among those who are used to indulgence and leisure. There was a discordantly twanging of lute strings from the balcony above. Wood scraped, and someone muffled a shout that the heights of the vaulted ceiling still gladly echoed. Josephine had thought to settle the musicians there, but had assumed they'd have the wits to tune their instruments elsewhere, or whatever it was that was causing the ruckus.
Oh, makers!
She stifled the rest. Where's Seneschal Baldwin? Cassandra craned her head towards the hall proper.
Judging by his sudden hurry, he's already ahead of you.
Cassandra's greater height had given her a small but crucial advantage in angle of view. She shifted back, the chafe of cloth under her palm, reminded Josephine that she'd never taken her hand off Cassandra's arm. She barely managed to slide it away surreptitiously.
I should go. I suppose so.
As arresting as Cassandra was, standing tall and controlled, the brief amusement in her eyes turned her countenance strangely sweet.
If you wish to speak of my, wardrobe later, I
look forward to it. Josephine cast a last sideways glance at her. Have as pleasant an evening as you can.
I shall try, Lady Montpellier.
A while later, the musicians found their places, the stumbling lutist included. Leading with a selection of Ferelden part songs, they soon faded into the background of Josephine's concerns. At the end of winter, fresh comestibles were hard to come by for gold or favors, but Josephine had done her utmost. The heavy Ferelden fare of the main courses was brightened by cherry compotes, tiny apple tarts with cream, and candied oranges from across the waking sea. If she'd been able to persuade someone for a measure of cinnamon, she'd have added the almond milk and rice pudding her mother's cook used to make. On the other hand, it would have made her homesick, and this was not an evening for reveries. She flitted from one cluster of guests to the next. To her relief, Llewellyn had appeared, although in understated attire of green and brown that helped her blend with the steep candlelight shadows along the walls. "We must make select concessions," Josephine muttered to a disproving bond from Killarney. "The Prophet herself began her life as a mortal woman. Humility is a virtue in her herald as well." The bond harrumphed, and Josephine excused herself with a bow, ignoring the irritable tightness between her shoulder blades. One step at a time would get them all where they needed to go. As she swept the room, she counted their visitors and remarked on the Inquisition members alike. Vivienne, encircled by the rapt, masked figures of several Orlesians, Leliana, who'd managed to trade her spymaster's hood for a long red kirtle, slipping into the hall as if she were fashionably late, rather than delayed by the crisis in Verchet. Cassandra lingered at the table, her hair pushed back, bracketed on one side by the Marquis du Lac in his own seat. The Marquis was a man of middle years, built like a hunting hound, and festooned with a slight surfeit of lace, even to Josephine's tastes. His gestures snapped in the air, but he was listening avidly to Cassandra's account, whatever the subject. Josephine smiled a somewhat rueful smile Cassandra's way. She could not be sure if it was spotted as Cassandra lifted her glass. Tonight, she supposed, their duty to the Inquisition wore a different guise. So she inquired after the nieces of Ferelden Dowagers and the bandit troubles of Dale's lordlings. She made circumspect promises of audiences and swore on her honor that the Arl of the West Hills would have the Inquisition's aid with the rifts gaping open across the countryside. She steered the Arl's representative towards the Inquisitor. Llewellyn would find discussion of a new expedition far preferable to the quandaries of noble etiquette.
As most of the heavy tables were being dismantled to make more room for dancing, Josephine snatched up her goblet and hid in a chair next to the fireplace, where Varric would write on calmer days. She dutifully spun on the floor to lively Orlesian tunes. Her right slipper was digging into her heel most disagreeably. The current piece of music was carried on voices rather than instruments, a lingering Heartland's madrigal. That meant a brief reprieve from trying to remember how Ferelden's danced the pavane. Someone had opened the side door to the garden. The clean smell of spring rain billowed in to swirl through the air heated by bodies and fires.
No!
Cassandra's voice, though low, cracked with sheer fury. The minstrels had chosen that moment to rearrange their assembly for the next dance, and the word rang out clear to Josephine. It had come from the direction of the garden. She sidled her way past a comtesse's voluminous hoop skirts and drew a few meddlesome glances, but thankfully they did not linger. Only belatedly, she recalled that the door would shut with a prodigious slam unless eased closed. She put her shoulder against the thick, oaken thing when Cassandra spoke again in the shadowed gallery hedging the garden.
"Maker's breath, if you do not shut up, I will hit you!"
The man replied in a stream of rapid, slightly slurred Orlesian.
"Ah, but my sweet, fierce seeker, nothing would please me better." "Not another word."
"No, no woman has ever spoken to me this way. You don't underst—"
Josephine abandoned the door to its noisy fate. "My lord Marquis, I do apologize, but if you would—" She got no further. Cassandra stepped forward, snarled in her throat, and dropped the woefully inebriated Marquis du Lac at Josephine's feet with a single, sharp punch. Then she vaulted the low railing of the gallery and strode off into the garden. Rain dripped off the cowl of Josephine's cloak, but the woolen lining kept her cocooned in warmth. The clouds were thinning above Skyhold. Only the pitch-dipped watch torches burned on the battlements anymore, save for a few scattered candles in the main keep windows. With a tint of tired hysteria, she envisioned explaining to her mother that she had resigned as ambassador and was coming home on the next ship. "Dearest Mama, I prevailed against many harrowing obstacles, and then came the Wintersend feast, my one shining opportunity." She leaned against the wall and watched the pallid shapes of the mountains beyond the towers. "It is not all bad. I will not miss the winters, or the fact that the nearest city is 3 weeks away." Loose gravel ground under approaching feet. Josephine stood bolt upright. The guard had been kind enough to shorten his round so she could ponder undisturbed. Cassandra, too, wore a half-cloak of dense wool. Her sword and dagger were buckled at her hips again, over a simple, dark gambeson. She stopped, quiet, 2 steps away from Josephine. They stood like that for a moment.
"What can I do for you, Seeker?"
"I am sorry, but I must speak."
Josephine dropped her face against her palm.
"You go first, Lady Pentagast, please."
Cassandra's jaw twitched. "I'm sure I did not act worthy of that title tonight." Josephine's mind, working as it did, through diplomatic convolutions when it must and gentler windings when it could, she almost spoke to reassure Cassandra before it even occurred to her that the comment could be warranted.
"I assaulted a guest inside our walls. Hospitality demands he can seek redress. It would not please me to make a public apology, I admit, but if the Inquisition requires it, I will."
Josephine swallowed. Her heart abruptly felt tender against her ribs, for reasons she could not scrutinize there and then.
"Well," she said, "first we must wait for the Marquis to sober up. The healer said you did not permanently crook his nose."
"Good, I think."
"You think?"
"A part of me would—"
Cassandra seemed to relax a little.
"I am not used to such advances. Most people see the Seeker emblem and keep their distance."
and the rest must realize you could break them in half if you wished," Josephine dared to venture. Cassandra made a sound between a scoff and a chortle. "Thank you for putting it so uncouthly, my lady, so I did not have to." Slowly, Josephine stepped closer, so that the fluttering torchlight reached her. "The Marquis may yet give us trouble. By Ferelden and Orlesian custom, he is the offended party. You may need to make amends by words or by sword."
"It's the word part that worries me." Cassandra's gaze turned distant again. "I am not so proud that I'd sabotage your alliance with him, if it can still be saved."
That was the marrow of the problem, was it not? Josephine had, even if indirectly, led Cassandra into her predicament. But now she'd have to find her own way out. On a rare, bold impulse, she grasped Cassandra's hands. "If you are not so proud, would I be so callous then?" She firmed her jaw. "In a word, the Marquis was an insufferable rube, and if I didn't sorely need his ships, I'd have him tossed out of the gate on his posterior." She dropped her eyes to the tips of her shoes. "I beg your pardon. I'm sure you don't need me to champion you in this matter." Cassandra's gloved fingers shifted to cup around Josephine's. Drops of rain struck and spread across the pale leather as she watched them, their joined hands, and wondered.
"It is a novel thought. More often, I find myself playing the champion."
"A role that suits you well," Josephine said softly. She did not want Cassandra to take her hands away, but that wasn't a thing she could say aloud. She fumbled for something in its stead. "May I? You seemed very distracted in the meeting today, like something was the matter." Cassandra sighed, the kind of slow, ponderous sound that either heralded or impeded a confession.
"I lost a trail in the hinterlands. It is a concern for me, for now. If anything ever comes of it, I may need to ask for the Inquisition's help."
Nodding once, Josephine looked up. The rain was dwindling, a haphazard last dash of droplets here and there, the clouds dispersing into patchy, luminous swirls around the greater moon. The second one would only appear out later. Cassandra met her gaze.
"I'm glad you asked, Lady Josephine."
There were raindrops clinging to her lashes as she lifted Josephine's hand and pressed her mouth to the backs of her fingers. Josephine drew and held a small, stunned breath. Reaching up, she kissed Cassandra's cheek as she would that of a friend, back in university in Val Royeau, where life had contained its share of scandals at parties, but decidedly fewer moments such as this, atop chilly battlements in the dark of this first night of spring. "Do not mention it," she said, "until you require that help. I will do whatever I can." They broke apart out of some unspoken accord. Cassandra only went as far as the nearest crenel in the battlement, leaning her hand on the edge of the chest-high gap. "It will be a clear day tomorrow." Sweeping back her hood, Josephine came up beside her. "I believe it will." The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the author's post. Thanks for listening.
In the Ink of Her Eyes. Written by Paper Inui. Read by Opalsong. Part 3 of the So Falls the Light series.
Searching for someone to lead me. Can you guide me to the revolt inside me? Promise surviving the reach. Promise surviving the breach.
Beyond the hardy pines clinging to the cliff's edge, the Skyhold signal horn rang out. Cassandra stalled her horse to better make out two short blasts, allies coming in. She's ridden out along the craggy edge that spread from the end of the stone bridge and tipped into the gorge that made Skyhold all but unassailable. Both the horse and Cassandra herself had needed an outing. One could only wait idly for so long. But with the Inquisitor's expected return so near, Cassandra didn't dare commit to any task that might take her out of the castle. She gave the mare her head, and they careened down towards the lone road climbing to Skyhold. Pebbles scattered under the horse's hooves. A Ferelden thoroughbred, she was more at home on these mountain meadows and snaking footpaths than her rider. The party of four cantering toward the bridge seemed untruncated. Cassandra sought the silverite edge of Blackwell's shield, or the scarlet of Sarah's tunic in vain. A guard rode in the front and at the rear, in the green hoods of Inquisition troops. The second rider in the group raised her head up, spotted Cassandra on the slope conjoining the road, and waved. Her movement dropped back her cowl. The wind caught her hair like a tattered banner. The first reason for Cassandra's concern had been the Inquisitor's safe return. The second, more guarded reason, whose growing importance she could sense but not quite define to her satisfaction, was calling out a greeting into the breeze. She guided her huffing horse down to the road and joined the riding party.
"You are a sight for sore eyes, Lady Josephine. Are the others coming?"
Josephine smiled, her green eyes warm and weary, gesturing at her party to go on. The bridge began barely 100 paces ahead. "Lady Llewellyn and your other companions are on their way. We had word of new rifts near Leeds, so I was left to return alone by ship," she insisted.
While the news did little to quell Cassandra's private anxieties, she said, "I understand. It is a duty only she can do.
Sir Blackwell and Master Solas will not let her come to harm. Oh!" Josephine's reassurance was halted by Cassandra's horse nuzzling at her sleeve. "I'm sorry, Halimede. I don't have any carrots this time."
"Carrots?" Cassandra tugged the mare's head away. "Then, you know what I named her?"
"Master Dennett, I'm afraid, has spilled your secret. I hear she's quite the firebrand, but you've made friends at last."
Cassandra's eyebrows crept into nonplussed curves. "Yes, I believe we have. You find time to visit the stables, too? When do you sleep?"
Josephine laughed, clear as a bell. "I do try to meet everyone that stays at Skyhold, but I've always been fond of horses. When my duties permit..."
"Is it a haven?" Cassandra said in a quieter tone.
"A comfort when I need a moment away."
Turning her mount, Josephine steered him forward.
"I go to the garden, or the stables. Master Dennett is kind enough to pretend he doesn't notice when I sneak apples to the horses."
"That's a feat of diplomacy only you could accomplish. How did your visit to Val Royeaux go?" A remark from Liliana had led Cassandra to understand that Josephine's journey had involved a personal reason. She'd gone on official Inquisition business. Her devotion to her work might not have allowed an absence otherwise, but she'd handled some family matter, as well as attending the audiences of potential allies. Not entirely well. Tendrils of dark hair drifted over Josephine's cheek as her eyes wandered across the stone-strewn gorge surrounding Skyhold. "It seems there is an assassin's contract on me." Cassandra gaped. It took her a moment to work up a horse. "What?" "The House of Repose, you know of the guild, I'm sure, has a contract to kill any Montpellier that tries to trade in Orlais. You know, I was hoping..." Josephine might have calmed her spirits over the matter, but Cassandra had smacked face first into the shock of it. Her hand went to her sword, as if assailants might clamber onto the bridge at any moment. "You have assassins after you, and you sent your guards ahead?" Ducking her head, Josephine caught an errant lock of her hair in her fingers. "You were here, Lady Cassandra." Cassandra loosened her grip on the hilt. Something in Josephine's gentle emphasis made it hard to look at her. "Well, perhaps next time you wish me to serve as your bodyguard, you'll tell me when I am to begin." Even if she'd striven for sternness, the words came out soft. The wind carried the noises of the raised portcullis, and the soldiers toiling at the pulley, interlaced with the clang of a forge hammer and the shout of workers in the bailey. The painted gelding Josephine rode stepped restlessly, eager to finish this final leg of a taxing ride. I shall," Josephine said. "I was happy to see you. This was a longer absence than a diplomatic detour to Redcliffe." Even with her misgivings about lurking assassins, Cassandra couldn't gainsay that. She nodded to confirm Josephine's sentiment, and they let their horses trot the last distance to the shelter of the walls. Cassandra climbed the stairs to the old solaire with a heap of armor pieces balanced on her shoulder. Once upon a time, the sunny rooms at the top of the main keep had been reserved for some time-forgotten ruling family. In keeping with Antivan tradition, Josephine had commandeered them as a haven for the women of Skyhold. In honesty, Cassandra had only seen Sarah slink out of the solar once, and shortly afterwards Josephine's attaché had appeared in a state of towering distress, because Lady Montpellier's ambassadorial seal was nowhere to be found. The seal later reappeared at the bottom of Cullen's ale tankard at the Herald's Rest. Cassandra had thought of taking Sarah to task over it, then thought again. If the Inquisition purported to serve a pure cause, the occasional yank earthward from its lofty station was not a bad thing. Most often the solaire was for Josephine and her scribes, Vivienne sitting in the ample light with her correspondence, or Liliana in a moment of rare idleness, strumming her lute on the windowsill. Cassandra was an uncommon visitor, but if she chanced to come up, her preferred reading place, the settee by the southern window, always seemed to be empty. This morning, one of the dainty Orlesian tables had been pulled to the settee. Fat raindrops pelted the window, but a candle set in a glass lantern spread warm light. Josephine was tapping her quill on a piece of paper, already full of splotches and struck out sentences. A sketch leaf of sorts. She had a pristine, creamy sheet pinned to a writing board at her elbow. "Good morning." Cassandra looked about, thwarted by this claiming of her spot. On the other hand, she should hardly spread her mess of equipment on the brocade-covered settee. "Ah," Josephine's head snapped up. "Pardon me, I was lost in thought. I must get this wording right, and my formal Navarin has gone sadly unused." Cassandra unloaded her burden into Leliana's window alcove. Josephine eyed the tangle of strips, buckles, and riveted leather. "I take it you also came up here to work?" "I thought I would," Cassandra said. "It's a little wet today to do armor repairs in the bailey." She sent up a brief prayer that Josephine wouldn't mention her dragging the better part of her kit up 4 flights of stairs. Concealing ulterior motives was far from her forte.
Please do. There is room. Josephine frowned at her notes, and then at the glossary opened on the corner of the desk.
Why not simply write in common? Anyone of any importance in Navarra will know it.
Yes, Josephine sighed. But Lord Kalos is eccentric and very traditional.
Clan Kalos of Mount Winspur?
Fragments of childhood lessons fell together in Cassandra's mind.
Maker's breath! Have they not tumbled down the mountain with the ruins of their keep yet?
Josephine gave that husky giggle of scandalized delight that had been Cassandra's entire purpose in choosing her phrasing. Goodness! Well, they haven't, and I must ask a favor of them. I'm not sure if I'm humbly requesting an audience with the head of the clan, or, suggesting we begin a discreet affair.
That old chestnut.
Cassandra finished arranging her armor pieces, rags, and tools to her satisfaction. Unbuckling her sword belt, she hung it across the corner of the settee, so that she could reach it with a single step from where she sat.
I am a little rusty myself, but I should remember how not to proposition surly clan lords. Allow me?
A glimmer of relief lit in Josephine's eyes. So you are a champion of correspondence, as well as of truth and justice, Lady Cassandra?
If it is required. Cassandra had to clear her throat.
In that case, I shall allow you, by all means. Josephine made room for Cassandra to take a seat next to her. Leliana had been casting appraising sideways glances at Cassandra for most of the meeting. The Inquisitor and Cullen were immersed in a debate in lowered voices. Llewellyn almost never raised hers, but there'd been some mention in a report that had clearly agitated her. Josephine muttered something about a matter she might handle while they finished, and slipped out of the war room in a swirl of skirts.
I have people watching over her, Cassandra.
Cassandra turned in mid-step, aborting what she now realized had been an instinctive course to the door.
I would expect no less.
If you kept a closer guard on her, you'd be sleeping at her doorstep. Leliana folded back her hood. By now, Cassandra was sure she mostly wore it for effect. The sinister, subtle left hand, slipping a blade or a well-chosen word into every seam of weakness. The thought distracted her from the unwelcome heat creeping up her neck.
Of course I am concerned, she said. Her life is in constant danger.
I didn't see you trailing Iron Bull's every step when he broke ties with the Ben Hasrath. Leliana lifted one of Cullen's carved troop markers from the table in what was clearly a loaded gesture.
Iron Bull is a 7-foot-tall trained killer, Sister Leliana. The comparison hardly stands.
Josie was quite clear about wanting to do things her way. Leliana's tone sparked a flicker of sympathy in Cassandra. I told her I could handle the House of Repose.
She refused?
Cassandra knew that Josephine had requested the Inquisitor's patience in the affair, but it shouldn't have surprised her that Leliana also had a part in it. The long friendship and deep regard between the two were plain to see, and gave Cassandra an instinct to navigate this bog of a conversation with as much grace as possible. She has her reasons. I do what I can to make sure she can hold to them. What else is an old friend to do? Cassandra shrugged in sympathy, some of her tension dropping away.
She's fortunate to have you.
Oh, I know. Cassandra skipped the wooden marker along the length of the Drakon River. And you. I never said you should stop, Cassandra, only that it's rather obvious what you are doing.
An urgent look to their left assuaged Cassandra that the Inquisitor and Cullen were too engaged to be overhearing them. Their tones had settled into something resembling a reasoned discussion, which still stranded Cassandra with Leliana, and that unsettling little smile at the corner of her mouth.
I believe it was you who decided I had no subtlety.
Cassandra tried to sound curt.
Neither did I say that was a bad thing, Leliana said, humming. It's a good balance, I think.
A good balance with what, exactly? All that this setup was missing was Varric, or maybe Solas, come up to play Leliana's partner in insufferable riddling.
Between forthrightness and delicacy, perhaps? Before Cassandra could formulate a response to that, the Inquisitor returned to the table, adjusting her fitted jerkin with a self-effacing air.
I believe the Commander and I are in agreement now. We can continue.
Liliana dropped the troop marker into the box reserved for them and leaned in beside Cassandra's shoulder. If you are missing an opening, she's been pining after Antivan firefruit for months. They should just be coming to season in the Menanturb Valley.
I see.
Cassandra left a good many of her conversations with Liliana, feeling as if she'd missed something. That was not new. When Josephine blew back in the door with apologies for her absence, Cassandra focused on the colors and contours of the opened map, so as not to meet someone's eyes and give away her slowly stirring thoughts. It could take weeks for Inquisition requisitions to arrive at Skyhold. With summer coming on, supply routes ran as swiftly as they ever would. But Cassandra added her private notes to an outbound purchase order and settled into wait. Word flew from Crestwood of a high dragon that had entrenched itself in the ancient ruins at the bottom of a sunken valley. With poorly concealed trepidation, Llewellyn asked Cassandra to join her in the attempt to quell the beast. It would claim a couple of weeks of their time, if they were lucky, and bring calm to a harried region and prestige and influence to the Inquisition. Before their departure, Cassandra drew Liliana aside and, halting and solemn, reaffirmed that Liliana would maintain a guard on Josephine. Josephine's more urbane efforts to solve the problem hanging over her were bearing fruit, she'd confided in Cassandra one evening over supper. She just needed some more time, and a few additional favors. Liliana smiled, squeezing Cassandra's forearm, and bade her good hunting. Cassandra rode out, thinking that for once in her life she had grasped Liliana's meaning. In the end, the dragon lay dead in the fen, the carcass being stripped of useful parts by the chief tanner, her apprentices, and a dozen sweating, groaning Inquisition soldiers. Cassandra yanked off her sweltering helmet to find an opalescent scale trapped in the hinge of the visor. It had fallen from the dragon unscratched. It flexed slightly as she bent it, and shone with hues of vivid amber and violet. The sun gilded the scale a deep, tawny color, green at the edges, and her throat thickened inexplicably. The scale remained wrapped in a square of cloth and hidden in her bag after their return. The short, warm months were packed with activity. Cassandra went an entire week without seeing the Inquisitor, Josephine, or Vivienne, each submerged in diplomacy of their own particular strain. She took refuge in her sparring sessions with Iron Bull and Blackwall, and, as always, woke even earlier than usual on the day the courier was due. She'd been hunting for her vanished seeker brethren since winter. Her most promising lead had withered to nothing at Wintersend. Soon enough, she'd have to request Josephine's or Liliana's help. Her own resources, never sumptuous, were on the verge of being exhausted. This sultry, stormy day, she'd kept glancing at the gate throughout the day. When the gatehouse guard signaled an inbound rider, the evening shadows already sat velvety upon the muddy bailey. Cassandra waited for the man to divide his urgent dispatches to the seneschal and to Liliana. Before she could even approach, he sought her attention. "Seeker Pentagast, I was given something for you." Wayward hope rose in her throat, only to be replaced by confusion as the courier untied a small wooden crate from his saddle. "What is this?" "Antivan firefruit, Lady Seeker, to be carried with all haste, I was told." Cassandra took the crate, which spread the lush, cloying fragrance of fruit just on the edge of being overripe. "Thank you." The courier led his soaked horse towards the stables, and Cassandra was left in the quietening bailey to consider. Out of necessity, she'd stepped back her efforts to play sentinel to Josephine. Her ambassadorial duties remained a lion's share of her time. As pleased as Josephine most often seemed to see Cassandra, she did try to make time for everyone that came to her. Cassandra could hardly press that principle.
She also had a reason for a brief visit. She could check if Josephine were up, and perhaps exchange a few words. Bring her the blasted fruit, at least, while they were still sweet. She chose a dozen of the fruit, specimens whose dull, brown, springy skin was unbruised and whole, and laid them out on rough, clean linen. It wasn't the most ornamental of gift baskets, but it would hopefully serve. A stripe of candlelight spilled from beneath the door to Josephine's study, and a watchful soldier stood beside it. Cassandra nodded to the woman with approval and rapped on the door. "Cassandra!" Josephine scampered up from behind her desk, her expression opened into surprise from a pensive knit of brows. "Please, come in. I haven't seen you in... Are those what they seem to be?" Shutting the door with her free hand, deprived of her chance to make a courteous gesture of the fruit, Cassandra held them out. "Yes, I hope so, Lady Josephine." Josephine put away her quill. Her desk was lit with candles shut in lanterns to safeguard the heaps of letters and reports, agreements and ledgers. The late evening showed in her bearing. Her chain of office had been unclasped from her neck, and she wore a wide-hemmed, sleeveless kirtle over a shirt of fine linen. She clearly had not been expecting visitors. Then again, neither was Cassandra, in her shirt sleeves and comfortably worn leather breeches, cutting the most dashing silhouette she might have. Josephine's mouth curled into a brilliant, incredulous smile as she reached to take a fruit. "How did you manage this? Are they..." She didn't seem to dare complete the question. "They are for you," Cassandra said, then wished she could swallow her blunt words. When she'd scribbled down the requisition, it hadn't truly connected to the moment when she was supposed to present the fruit to Josephine. "Maker's grace! I won't ask what went into getting them here." Josephine set the basket on a miraculously empty corner of her desk. "Thank you. Thank you so much." She squeezed Cassandra's hand, lingering there, and Cassandra let her shoulders drop loose. It was no trouble. It was becoming worth every bit of her expense. "Have you ever had one? A fire fruit?" Josephine stepped back. Her fingers left a trace of warmth on Cassandra's own. "I do not think so. They do not really look like much." Josephine laughed. "Appearances can be deceiving. They are incomparable with mint and a scoop of cream, but I could eat them just like this." She tilted her head. "I'm sorry, there's a letter I really must finish, but if you don't mind waiting a moment, we could split one, or even two." "I could start with one," Cassandra said, and allowed herself to go on. "I don't mind. My duties are done." "There are some books on the bottom shelf." Josephine gestured towards the nook set up by one high window, a settee framed by a bookcase and a many-branched iron holder, where two candles burned. "I'll only be a moment." Tilting the scabbard at her hip so she could sit comfortably, Cassandra pulled out a volume of Orlesian poetry. The author's name was lost to time, but their Chanson de Geste rendition of the Battle of Isley roused and held her interest. Josephine's quill scratched paper in a measured, efficient rhythm. One of the candles guttered, and Cassandra rose to cut away a bit of the soft tallow to reveal the wick. She was sliding the candle back onto its stick when the door was turned. "Yes?" said Josephine. The sound of her quill halted. She'd hardly spoken by the time a scout, his hood raised, stepped up to her desk and sketched a respectful half-bow. "Word from the spymaster, Lady Montpellier." "This late? What is the matter?" Josephine pushed her chair back heavily so that its feet ground against the floor. She never looked away from the scout, her shoulders strung with tension. "I thought Leliana had retired." Across her brightly illuminated desk, the man raised his arm. Cassandra made a shout, then snapped her mouth and eyes shut as the smoke bomb smashed onto the stone floor. It had been thrown to incapacitate Josephine, who'd had the sense to keep the large desk between herself and the attacker. He was in the light, Cassandra herself in the half-shadow created by the lone candle. She had a crucial instant before he spotted her movement. Exhaling her last lungful, she drew her sword and moved. The dregs of the grenade fouled the air, stinging her nose. A strangled hacking came from her right, but she couldn't go to Josephine now. The attacker rolled under her first swing and tumbled onto his feet, his face obscured by the cowl. He struck with a spare, precise economy of movement, the dirk in his hand glancing from Cassandra's hastily turned blade. She shouted as she riposted, knowing time to be on her side. Josephine's study was right off the main hall, even with the late hour. A commotion could only go unheeded for so long. They circled, the assassin doing his utmost to crowd Cassandra and her longer blade in the confines of the room. She struck a gash in his forearm. He sidestepped towards the desk, spattering papers with blood. Flinging a book from the desk into her face, he used that distraction to hammer a hobnailed boot heel into her knee. Thwarted by her own reflexive hobble, Cassandra almost collided with the tall candle holder. She spied Josephine's disheveled hair behind the desk and heard her give a wretched, gagging sound. As the would-be assassin loomed closer, dirk at the ready, Cassandra grabbed the candle holder and heaved it forward with all her strength. The candle went out at her pull, but the liquid tallow spilled across the man's head. Candle spikes caught in his short sleeve. Reaching out as he fell, he seized a firm handful of Cassandra's shirt front, and she stumbled forward after her balance. Her breath tore out of her as the dirk sank into her stomach, a vicious, stubborn stab. She straightened with a tooth-gritting effort, trod on the man's weapon hand, and swept the blade away from him with her boot. Not a twitch. Her sword's point found his throat. Blood soaked her hip and thigh. It might have been a lucky blow, but the wound bled too swiftly for her comfort. If the blade had gone deep enough, she might have a punctured organ. He stayed silent. In another moment, she might have approved of his discipline, but trying to focus consumed her faculties. He also might not wish to live to test the Inquisition's powers of interrogation. "Josephine?" Cassandra called, her voice going faint. Her hand on her stomach could not suffice to stem the bleeding. "Cassandra?" Neither did Josephine sound her best, but her feet shuffled for purchase. "Call for help. Now." Short, straightforward command, the essence of her need. She had to stay lucid. Snake-quick, the assassin grabbed for the blade of Cassandra's sword. His reinforced glove made for a grip that almost unarmed her, before she pulled back her weapon, swore at the stars flaring in her eyes, and plunged the blade down into his leg. He screamed. As if that blow had cost her too much, she teetered, her sword clanging to the floor. "Oh!" Josephine said, anguished, from somewhere very far away. "Oh, my dear!" A cloud of papers billowed up from the desk as Cassandra staggered into a corner of it, her head ringing. Josephine's choked voice rose into a shout for help. Cassandra, for her part, tasted copper and bile, and everything went dark. A tart sweet smell in the air slid into Cassandra's awareness. She'd fallen into a light sleep, her pains cushioned by a draught of elf root and blood lotus. For the first time since her initial recovery of consciousness, she scanned her surroundings. The gray stone of the main keep showed on the ceiling and the walls, which were hung with simple floral tapestries. Neither the infirmary nor her quarters above the forge, then. "You're awake," Josephine said from beside her, soft as a breath. Cassandra veered, well as she could, lying down, and slumped back into the bed as the movement tore at her abdomen. "Yes," she said, exhaling. "Where is this?" "My room." Josephine set down the round-tipped silver knife that she was using to peel a fruit. "Your lodgings are rather noisy, and the infirmary... well, I insisted." "The Lady Ambassador is not concerned for the propriety of a wounded woman in her bed?" She ought to have been proud of how she did not stutter, but Josephine's voice was too low, too careful. I'm sharing with Leliana until you are better. Besides, I'll give my bed to my savior if I so wish, and any wagging tongues may go tie themselves in knots. Josephine brought her hand to Cassandra's hair, which was certain to be matted and mussed by the pillow. Her fingers held the same tangy fragrance that Cassandra had smelled.
I came to see you on a whim.
Her own words were a whisper. She let Josephine stroke through her hair. Your whim saved my life. When Josephine's sought her gaze, Cassandra made herself meet her. In the afternoon sun, her eyes were the color of the dragon scale, green, striated with gold. Because anything she did could not help but be foolish, Cassandra drew Josephine in with a sleep-heavy hand until their heads rested together.
I'll return your bed post-haste, I promise. And you should thank yourself. If you had not stalled him, I would not have realized anything was wrong.
I recognized him, Josephine mumbled. He was hired as a stonemason, not as a scout. Cassandra almost pointed out that the truth would be drawn from the man. It would have been an idle observation, and not one she wanted here, souring the quiet nearness. The moment strung between them.
Bless your memory for faces.
Josephine shifted, one knee on the bed, curving meticulously beside Cassandra, so as not to disturb her injury. I do wish he'd never come. I thought I had time to solve this without any more lives being lost. I almost did, Cassandra.
You did not choose when he would act, she said, knowing it to be little consolation.
Josephine's sigh blew against the crown of Cassandra's head. I'm going back to Val Royo to finalize the arrangements. The Dew Paroquets will have their status restored, and this will be over.
It must be difficult sometimes,
Cassandra said, half to herself,
living as if the world were a much better place than it is.
A moment passed, sunlit and silent, before Josephine spoke. I believe it's worthwhile. Every time Aban lays down her sword and speaks to her freemen instead of killing one as an example, or someone shows mercy instead of the door to a vagrant. I am a drop in a river, I know that. But it is said that everything precious is worth striving for.
She meant, of course, her bright, unreachable dreams of peace in a world groaning at the seams as it was.
Cassandra heard a gentle opening there. An unwitting one, perhaps, and how many had she already missed in the last months?
When you return.
She couldn't quite sit up, but she could lay a light hand on Josephine's side.
Josephine's eyes widened. If you do not think it too forward, we should speak. You and I. There is the matter of...
Of us? Josephine's mouth curled, her teeth tugging at her lip and then releasing it, and a breathless laugh alongside.
Perhaps. That is, I. Why had she opened her mouth? There was no way out. She was trapped in this bed and in Josephine's glimmering eyes, free and adrift.
Oh, my dear, Josephine said again, a note of fathomless fondness, and kissed her.
After the first stunned breath that almost derailed the kiss, Cassandra let herself fall into it, in all its newness and tenderness.
Her hand clasped Josephine's cheek. Josephine slotted her own fingers over Cassandra's to keep it securely there.
I take it I was not too forward, was what she managed to put together as Josephine withdrew.
If you'd made me wait all through a month of sailing and riding, I'd have sent a strongly worded letter with every raven, and let Leliana read them first.
Ah, neither is the Lady Ambassador above resorting to blackmail, I see.
Josephine's back was warm under her hand, bent towards Cassandra. Kiss me again, and it may not be needed. Cassandra did, soft and studying, laced with laughter. The end.
Templar igniting fire.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong, and from there you can find a link to the author's post. Thanks for listening!